Hi, Royals fans. This is JJ Piccolo. If you suffer a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nall in Overland Park. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome to Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Abriscoe. Blake Schneider's on the other side of the glass, DJing, producing, hitting buttons. I'm watching a golf infomercial because it's the only channel that I can watch right now. But I'll give you play-by-play right now. There's a man teaching a woman how to string a driver, and looks like she's probably already a natural. Wow, what a product. The product being, I don't actually know what. I don't know if it's an ad for the clubs, the training. There was a putting green earlier, but I bet no matter what, she's going to be better at golf now because of this magical product, and you would too. I can't promise that. I can promise that your day will be better if you listen to Sports Sunday, which is what you're listening to right now. So congratulations, your day is already awesome. We got a lot to talk about today. Some of it not so good, some of it not so good, some of it not that great, some of it okay. It's just that most of the day's topics right now have their various ups and downs. I don't know if you caught a whole lot of the baseball yesterday, but Jackson Coar had his second start. It didn't go very well. I haven't yet had a chance in these airwaves. Let's talk about the Chiefs' right guard situation. Kyle Long out through the rest of the offseason, preseason, hoping to have him back by week one. That's not great. There is a silver lining of that one, but it's not ideal. The maybe most ideal thing for me at this point is that I'm a Suns fan, and they're going for the sweep tonight. So I'm excited about that. And more good news is the programming today. It means you get to hear a little bit of Nets and Bucks today at 2:30 here on these very airwaves. We'll have a lot of baseball the remainder of the day, though. We'll talk about it some here on Sports Sunday. We'll talk about it some coming up at 1 o'clock on Boulevard Brewing Company Baseball tonight. Also, with yours truly, an extra double-stuffed Oreo version, hour and a half long, Boulevard Baseball tonight, this afternoon. And as much as I do want to talk about the Chiefs' right guard situation, as much as I do want to talk about Kyle Long and all of that, which, again, if you're worried about right guard in light of the loss of Kyle Long, it's going to be fine. But losing Kyle Long does stink because he, I think, may have had the inside track to actually start this year. No, I don't think he does. We'll get more around that in a little bit because it's not quite as pressing as maybe the bigger, larger scale issue right now for the Royals. Now, I was filling in on the program on Monday. It was right before, the day of Jackson Coar's first major league start. He went out there. He labored through two-thirds of an inning. Not two and a third, not two and two-thirds. He went and labored through two-thirds of an inning, and the Royals pulled him. Matheny pulled him. I understand. It was a disaster. He was clearly too tightly wound. He had absolutely no command whatsoever. He was literally bouncing balls into the dirt, I think, on three separate occasions. It was ugly. Last night, against the A's, good baseball team, not going to blow your socks off 100% of the time, but a good baseball team. Like, they're 39-27, good record, good baseball team. Jackson Coar goes out, and now through two major league starts, he has thrown two full innings. And part of me isn't really even thinking about Jackson Coar as much right now, because things have broken so bad after he looked so good in Omaha. It was 5-0 with, I believe, an 0.85 ERA. I have committed those numbers, I believe, to memory because we said them so many times leading up to his first start. We'll hear from him in a little bit, and you can decide for yourself where he's at right now. That's all fine. But to go through one and a third, give up five hits, four runs, all of them earned, walked three guys, it ended up being even less damage than it could have been, considering some of the situations Coar found himself in. Took him 57 pitches to get through that one and a third. We'll talk about this in a much more macro sense with Leske coming up here at 10. David Leske of Inside the Crown. He'll join us momentarily about an hour. There are some larger scale systemic things that I think you could be at least be asking some questions about. Lesky will come and ask some of those very delicately, like, why do the Royals continue to employ Cal Eldred? You know, he'll have some delicate questions like that one. I don't know where to be finger-pointing right now. And maybe we shouldn't be finger-pointing at all. Maybe this is as simple as a guy who's needing a little bit of extra time warming up to the major league temperature. You know, I don't know that this is true. This seems like something that would be true, but also I may have just been accepting this is true for my entire life. But they say that if you drop a frog into a pot of boiling water, it'll hop out. But if you put a frog in room temperature water and then slowly turn up the heat, it eventually will just cook itself to death in there. I don't know that actually is true. Again, it seems true, and I've certainly heard it a lot.
I saw something just the other day that said that that might not be true.
That makes
I didn't bother to read it because I want it to be real.
See, that this is the thing. By and large, especially on a public platform, I think it's generally important to get our facts right, right? Generally speaking, if I told you that Jackson Coar threw a no-hitter last night, that would be irresponsible. If I told you that Kyle Long actually has three knees now, that would be irresponsible. I think if I admit on the front end, I'm not sure if that's just an old wives' tale or not. I think you're getting at least the proper context. And frankly, I'm afraid to type, you know, Snopes, frog in boiling water. Because I don't really want to lose that from me, from my memory bank. Boy, here's a story from 2006. This is 15 years of internet ago. The boiled frog myth. Stop the lying now! Also, if you throw a frog in boiling water, it might not be able to get out of the water in time, which is another good point that it makes. Apparently it's not true. This is from The Atlantic. If you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, it will unfortunately be hurt pretty badly before it manages to get out, if it can. And if you put it into a pot of tepid water and then turn on the heat, it will scramble out as soon as it gets uncomfortably warm. So you know how people, stupid people, used to believe that was real?
Ha! Those idiots.
Those dumb, dumb people that never Googled it until maybe they were live on the radio? Those genuine, what does it say on the back of those ignoramuses? I made a little pyramid sign with my hand.
I was wondering what the sign was.
I said the little, and I made a triangle. I was thinking about the little pin game at Cracker Barrel, where it says you know have to jump one golf tee over another one.
Oh,
you want to eliminate
them
all.
Chinese checkers or whatever.
Is that what it is? I think that's different. I think that's a bigger board.
It's Chinese something.
Anyway, I'm going to Google that also. We're going to learn a lot together today. We always do on a sports Sunday. I'm just more curious in the mornings. 9 a.m., I just want to Google things. I want to find out if I've been living a lie. But it says on the thing that, like, if you get down to one, you're an absolute gold darn genius. If you get two or three, you're pretty darn smart. If you get four or five, you got some work to do. And if you get six or more, you're an ignoramus. Did you find it? Is that...
It says, if you've ever eaten at Cracker Barrel.
And I have.
I can't believe it starts by saying that. You probably find yourself sitting at absentmindedly playing a little peg game. It's called...
This is peg game.
Peg game. Yeah, so. This is called... It's called...
Cross jump, peg. Jump all but one games, it says. All right, I'm going to read this verbatim now because I do have the thumbnail that actually has all of the information. And then I'm going to talk about Jackson Coar. It's all going to come around. Jump each tee and remove it. Leave only one, you're genius. Leave two and you're pretty smart. Leave three and you're just plain dumb. Leave four or more and you're just plain ignoramus. Cracker Barrel Country Store. I'm sure there's a strategy to that. I never got, like, incredible at it or anything.
This is a puzzle.
There are some fancier versions of it.
I'm looking at those.
You see the Amazon one that's got, like, spikes in it?
Yeah, I've got that one. I've got one that's more of, like, it looks like a badge almost. Or like
this one's with bullets, which is pretty hard.
That's cool.
I might need the just... Maybe I'd be less of an ignoramus if I just got a copy of one of these and just had it on the table at home. It feels like I'm always at Cracker Barrel, you know? I'll put my lawnmower up on my wall and hang it over my table and then just have a little triangle game.
Well, where else can you get a 4:30 dinner special?
That's a great point. With a scythe dangling auspiciously over your head.
Nothing says America like breakfast food, little brunch, and farm equipment.
I mean, listen, I don't make the rules. I didn't make that true, but it is. There aren't a lot of times in my life when breakfast food does not sound good. Like, I had a couple frozen waffles that I toasted them first. They weren't frozen when I ate them. I'm not a monster. I'm odd, but I'm not an animal. I had a couple of frozen waffles with some peanut butter this morning, some coffee. I had breakfast. But if someone was like, "Yo, I'm gonna dip out real quick. I'm gonna go across the street to Sonic. You know, in fact, I might have Sonic for lunch today between this show and baseball tonight. And you know what I'm gonna get if I go to Sonic? Not a hamburger, not a cheeseburger, not some chicken.
Breakfast burrito.
I'm gonna get some breakfast food. A breakfast burrito, breakfast toaster
I've
sandwich.
I've never had Sonic's breakfast.
Really?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, man. It's almost the only thing I ever get from Sonic.
Really?
Their burgers and stuff are pretty good, but I love a Sonic breakfast burrito. I love the toaster sandwich. They've got the one on the brioche that's just this delicate bread wrapped around this folded egg. Oh, my goodness. I almost always want breakfast food.
How do we always end up talking about food? Almost every time. It's because it runs the world. That's why. You don't even have to answer that.
That's why.
And yes, breakfast food always sounds good. The other day at 2 a.m., I went to Waffle House. And yes, it was every bit as delicious as I made that sound.
It sounds wonderful.
Chocolate chip pancakes. Or chocolate chip waffles with peanut butter.
Oh.
You're welcome.
I love waffles. I love frozen waffles. I love off-brand frozen waffles. I have a waffle maker at home. I love, you know.
I usually like to cook my waffles, but that's just me.
So, top five waffles. We do power rankings on Almost Entirely Sports pretty frequently. I think I can get you top five. I'm going to write down the phrase top five waffles. We may bring this back later this week. I don't know. But I think as my early ranking, and we're going to talk about Jackson Coar. We always talk about food because it runs the world and also the shows in the morning and my breakfast synapses are firing. Number five. Store brand frozen waffles. Your great
this
value.
This is just top overall waffle, right?
Top. Yeah, or, yeah, not individual toppings and stuff. This is
just the waffle.
The waffle, absolutely. Number five, store brand frozen waffle. Number four,
what store brand?
Any of them.
Doesn't matter.
That
it's like
includes
not like
all
Eggo
of them.
Over.
Well, Eggo's not a store brand. Eggo is number four.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Eggo waffles, because that is a brand name. Number five is a catch-all. Your great value, your target brand. Currently, I'm chomping down on some, I think, Trader Joe's frozen waffles. They're also pretty good. They're all good. They all deserve a spot there, even though they're
okay,
not
I see
as
what
good.
You're saying. I see what
so that's your generic grocery store brand waffle. Number four, Eggo frozen waffle. A little better, and it's good. Number three is, I hate to say this, it's the homemade waffle, just because I can never get the batter exactly where I want it to be. There's always some inconsistency, but oh, it's so good. Number two, you know what? Yeah, I'll stick it there. Number two, in-restaurant waffle. Your IHOPs, your Denny's, your Waffle House's OBV.
Your superior to Denny's, but yes.
But I'm trying to
see.
I'm doing
saying.
Big categories.
Yeah.
You're in a booth for sure. You're eating this waffle in a booth or with farm equipment over your head. Number one waffle, though. Number one type of waffle. Do you have a guess? There's an iconic number one waffle for me.
Is it the dunkable stick waffle you used to get as a kid?
No, that's great. That's number six. Number one. Is the Hotel Continental breakfast waffle.
Oh, man.
Right? It just is. It simply is.
Dude, you get to pour your own batter.
You pour your batter into the little cup.
The cooker.
And then you pour the batter into the little waffle
iron. And you get to watch
iron.
It fill up all the little sections real quick.
Yes. Yes. And then you flip it over so it gets airy in the middle. Batter runs to all sides. It beeps at you. You go. You get all the toppings you want from the little Continental breakfast bar. Oh, the Continental breakfast waffle is undefeated. I just hold my hands up in the air as if to praise the Lord. And I'm not mad about it.
Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Jesus, for all forms of waffles, especially the Continental Breakfast waffle at a middling hotel.
Believe it or not, you can actually waffle more things than just a waffle.
Since I have the one at home, I've gotten very curious about trying to waffle some other things. I don't think I've really done other thing successfully. I think
potatoes. You can waffle potatoes.
That's the one that I've honestly gotten the closest because I've seen it work. It's very tempting. So they say that a frog in warm water, you could put it in cold water and then warm it up and it'll stay in there and it'll just boil alive.
Only idiots believe that now.
Now, of course, that's not true.
Of course.
But that's what they say. It's an imperfect analogy anyway for Jackson Kowar, who we've been talking about this entire time. The Jackson Kowar immediate concern is that it is difficult to look as out of place as a pitcher making your major league debut as he has these last two games. Like, it's genuinely a little bit impressive because it just seems almost impossible. Two innings and two starts total, not good. Now, yesterday wouldn't have hurt me one bit to let the Royals lost this game 11-2. It was not over whenever Jackson Kowar left the game. It was 4-0 at the end of the second. So I'm not saying that there was nothing to lose still. But I would have much rather have seen Jackson Kowar try. Now, look, he got through the first barely and then came out for the second and he made the mess again. That was the argument after the first start, right? Was, boy, it would have been nice to see if he could get through that first inning and then get a chance in the top of the second to start something clean. In this game, he started the first inning clean, made a mess, got out of it after just one run worth of damage, got back into trouble again in the second, and then they yanked him. Threw in Ronald Bolaños, who was excellent last time out, was pretty darn good again yesterday. 3 1/3, 2 hits, 1 earned run, a couple of walks, 4 strikeouts. We'll take that. Jackson Kowar's ERA is 36. Ronald Bolaños' is 1.42. I added the point just for any more casual listeners who might think that 142 means 142 because Jackson Kowar's ERA is 36. 36 is very bad. 142.
It was 54 going into the game, so you could say you know this what? Is an improvement.
That's a great point.
Also, he went longer than last time. By the end of the year, he might put a whole game together.
Well, let's not get crazy. By the end of the year, he might get through the third and fourth. But so you can, slightly more macro, I would have liked to see him just continue to get to work through it at this point. But also, if you tell me, and we'll hear from Mike Matheny later on as well, if you tell me, hey, man, we don't want to just leave him out here to die. You know, we don't want to sacrifice him to the wolves right now. We want to protect his confidence on some level. Yeah, all right. That I get it. I really do. I'm not furious about that or anything. It just would have been kind of nice to see a little more work. But also, he did now he has now started 3 clean innings. And all 3 of them have ended up in disastrous messes. He got out of the first yesterday with just 1 run of damage. But it's been rough. So that's sort of the micro thing. Specifically to Kowar, I don't know when you start looking at something else. I don't know that it makes sense to see what he did in Omaha and then to see 2 terrible innings in the majors and then send him back down. I don't know if that makes sense. You would like to see him have some measure of success at the major league level so he's not totally left flapping in the wind. But I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know how reasonable it is to hold out hope for that. And maybe it is. But I think, based on what we all saw and heard and read from Omaha, I think you've got to believe that he's got really, really excellent stuff. He just hasn't had any command over it. He has not shown it at all in his 2 starts. That's different than just not having major league stuff. We just haven't. We've seen major league stuff in AAA, and we've seen some, like, double A, single A stuff at the majors. That's frustrating, but I don't think it's a death knell. I don't think that Jackson Kowar is done. But that specifically on Kowar, that's kind of where I'm at. Blake, you look like you got some.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go bigger picture in a second.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. I'm watching the game yesterday. There's a box called the strike zone. He had no control over where that fastball was going. He couldn't locate his fastball. The most locatable pitch in your arsenal that you have, he was all over the place. Couldn't do the change, couldn't do the fastball. It wasn't that the speed and velocity wasn't there, but when you don't really even know where your ball's going, you don't have as much confidence in your pitching. And he knew that he didn't know where his ball, like, he was, I could sense that he was fully aware. He wasn't confident in where that pitch was landing.
I don't know how familiar you are with baseball savant. It's something that I never touched it until Lesky brought it up.
I just started learning about it the other day.
So, if you go to Baseball Savant, it's now baseballsavant.mlb.com. It's something that I'll probably bring up with Lesky whenever we talk to him in half an hour. But he brought it up because he uses it all the time in the Inside the Crown newsletter. It's got these, you know, great, a bunch of incredible features. It's for somebody who has been watching baseball forever, but never, like, I don't feel like I've ever been a baseball scientist or perhaps a baseball savant. So if you go to Jackson Kowar's Baseball Savant page, you will see a heat map. And obviously, he hasn't thrown a lot of major league pitches at this point. It's around 100, a little less than 100. But it will show you his heat map for the fastball, for the changeup, and for a couple of curves. You can literally see where those are all at. And I'm not 100%. They don't always translate perfectly. But if you look at his location for his fastball and his changeup, there's almost no pattern to be found. It is pure chaos, and not chaos in each corner of the zone and chaos over both sides of the black. It's just all over the place. So it's a pretty good visualization if anyone wants to look at that element of it.
It's kind of like a Grand Theft Auto cheat code. It looks left, down, right, up, left, down, right, right, left, down, up.
Right. It's just, and then the last code input is just whoops. Because there's just every single one of these has some real low and away stuff for a righty. I guess it could be in on your feet if you're a lefty. It's tough. But back when I was filling in on the program on Monday, like I mentioned 20 minutes ago, when I started talking about Jack Skolar before the waffle incident, I was talking to Curtis Curtis was trying to help everyone manage their expectations. And I said, well, with Daniel Lynch and his starts going the way that they did, as he was presumably just tipping pitches, it seems like it was, if not as simple as that, that was the biggest issue, it seems. But I thought the Daniel Lynch frustrations would help temper our expectations with Jackson Kowar. And it clearly went worse than even my worst fear would have been. But one thing I said on Monday that I'm holding to now, and I'm quoting myself because it's helping me stay a bit steadier: Jackson Kowar was not going to send himself to Cooperstown or back to Omaha with his first start. Now, by his third start, maybe he will. I don't know. I don't expect to get any Jackson Kowar-based news today, but I guess we'll certainly keep an eye on it. Ooh, the Diamondbacks are getting a City Connects jersey. Their hat is black and white. Give us the teal. Give us the teal and the purple back. Sorry, I got attacked by Twitter. Basically, I was actually making sure that I didn't miss some amount of Royals news yet, because that is legitimately my concern. Maybe something wild will happen. I don't know. But I am not. I mean, if I was able to actually buy and sell stock in athletes as rising and dropping assets, first of all, I wouldn't have to talk to anyone ever again, because I would have bought a lot of Patrick Mahomes stock, probably pre-draft, and I would now be a very wealthy man. But because I can't do that, or haven't really done that. Somebody tweeted me that there's like a version of fantasy sports that's kind of like that, which I think is really interesting. But I need to be able to end up on Sports Wall Street. Hold on, John Wall Street.
That was good. That also sounds like an actual street.
It does. I wish John Wall Street existed. Damn, I'm mad that there's such a good name for it and doesn't exist. I would buy a little bit of Jackson Kowar stock right now to kind of diversify more my portfolio. Because the stock's not going to get lower unless he just completely bankrupts himself back in the minors at some point. I think that'll probably work itself out. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think Jackson Kowar is not some sort of unsavable at the moment. However, there is a larger pattern and some bigger picture things that I'm a little bit concerned about. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break here on Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Blake, I got to show you all the intros and stuff that I made a long time ago for this show. There's a version that has this song, but for a long time we stopped using it because we're not running the music into our podcast forms of everything. And we started using royalty-free stuff on almost entirely sports and all that. And so I just sort of forgot that some of these existed. It's a good way to start a little Sunday morning. It's Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Blake Schneider's on the other side of the glass. We'll talk about the Royals pitching in a second. I almost just threw my Sharpie all the way across the room at the glass there because there's usually an extra pane of glass that's between host chair and the guest chairs that's currently on the floor up there right now.
It was originally a COVID protectant.
Right.
It's
blocking some of those particles, some of those particulates.
Yeah.
It's been here for months, right? But it was moved to the ground at some point, and there's no one else in the studio, and I didn't feel like picking it up whenever I got here today, so it's still on the floor.
That'd be me. I moved it yesterday.
But I had gotten into the habit lately of throwing my pen and then just bouncing it off of that piece of plastic and then just back to myself. I don't know why. I don't know why I do a lot of the things that I do. It's just a thing I started doing.
It's a game of self-catch.
It kind of is. That sounds like a euphemism for something else. But I just got to the point where it was just, you know, you just throw the pen a little bit, catch it back to yourself. That's fine. But I almost just did it just now when gesturing at you and then caught myself moments before realizing that it would have meant I was doing the rest of this segment without a pen or that you would be hosting while I walked around to go pick up my pen and then come back to my chair again. But didn't happen.
I would have just walked out because I would have felt like this was assault.
Right, you would have felt threatened.
I would still have this protection layer here, but yeah. It's not the double protection.
That's right. That second layer of glass, it's like with bulletproof glass, you know, it'll shatter, but it's supposed to deaden the bullet or whatever. I'm not trying to break anything with a thrown Sharpie. I also, this might not make sense. I think because in the mornings, so obviously, if you're new to the show, if you don't tune in, don't know my voice, whatever, typically my domain is when it's much darker than it is right now. Almost entirely sports, most weeknights here on Sports Radio 810.
A man of the night.
I'm a bit of a vampire. You can subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports where you get your podcast if you're listening this morning, but you're like, I'm not going to listen to the radio at night. That's fine. That's why God invented podcasts. You can go to aes.show in your browser. It'll take you to a splash page with all the podcasts. But I think in the mornings I've got a more like erratic energy. Because part of me is still sleepy, even though I've been up for 2.5 hours or whatever. I've had coffee, plus I got a little pink Starburst, basically, flavored G Fuel. It's pretty nice. That's working for me. You would think I've got a little energy, but a little brain fog still, I think. I think that's why this show ends up talking about waffles as easily as it does. Because on AES, we have our rabbit trails, obviously, but I can usually at least blame Rudy or Beards for that, or it's something really interesting that catches my eye. I have very little focus at 9:30 a.m. I think that's my realization, is I'm just all over the place. So anyway, we're talking about Jackson Kowar. And I'm much closer to being directly nervous about Jackson Kowar than I was after his first start, before he had made his first start, any day before yesterday. Like, I'm not, it's not great, but I'm not like break glass, punch red button, throw Sharpie at Blake sort of levels of concern about Jackson Kowar. I'm concerned, but I'm not, as I said, I would buy stock on John Wall Street if given the opportunity, because it's probably coming at a pretty good price right now on Jackson Kowar. But You know, they like, you know, they say about the frog in the water. You know, I mean, like, two instances of something that can be a coincidence, three is a pattern, and then four frogs in a pot of boiling water, and they all die. From Jackson Kowar's first two starts, did Daniel Lynch get three? He got three, and they were all very poor, I believe.
You mean in his first three starts?
Yes.
I thought you meant if he got innings.
No, did he get a third
start?
He got
a fourth. Yes, I thought he had three starts total, and they called it quits.
I think that's right. You got two starts from Kowar that have gone disastrously. You got, I believe, three from Daniel Lynch. And both of them ended up, well, I can't say this for sure about Kowar. Lynch ended up going back to the minors because presumably he was pitch tipping. And he needed a little bit of a reset. So far, so good, I believe, in the minors. I think every report that I've seen, it's possible that I've missed a bad game or something. But most of the stuff that I've seen about Daniel Lynch in the minors has been that he has redone a little bit mechanically and that he looks good. Awesome. Great. But he came up and had to go back down for some fundamental reconstruction of at least one part of his game. I don't know that that's in the cards for Jackson Kowar, but it seems relatively likely right now. That's a concern on a couple levels. The he's ready, I think, can be drawn into question at least a little bit because they both seemed very unready for major league hitting and the major league experience altogether. But maybe the more frustrating thing, and this is also the easier thing, right? If you say, well, the evaluation process isn't quite right, no one's going to fire Dayton Moore. And also, I don't think Dayton Moore is himself saying, bring him up right this second. Don't bring him up yet. It's a collaborative effort. I'm confident. But once these guys got here, I don't know how many adjustments I've seen made. And this is something we'll talk to Leske about more in about 20 minutes, and it's something that he and I have already talked about, and so I'm copying Leske's homework on a couple things, which also means that if you disagree with me, you really disagree with Leske. I didn't see Jackson Kowar doing a whole lot differently over his now two starts and two total innings. Daniel Lynch went back down to the minors to fix his problems, partially because you can do it under less of a spotlight, obviously. But it seemed like he kept putting out the same flawed product his entire time in Kansas City at the major league level. Brady Singer's got about a year, not quite, but about a full year of being a starting pitcher now, about a full season, a little less, I think. And it had an entire offseason to work, which is important into this equation. What do we say literally every time Brady Singer comes up in conversation? What does he need to do? Do you know, Blake? Do you know the answer?
Be better.
Well, the second thing. Brady Singer
work
needs,
on his changeup.
Brady Singer needs a third pitch.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking constantly. Brady Singer, he might be able to hang at the major league level. He might be able to do two times through an inning and then peace out. But everybody knows, at the very least, his ceiling rising higher pretty much depends on him being able to trust a changeup. Everybody knows this. And then it was one of his last two starts in the broadcast. Rex Hudler said, well, you know, he's comfortable throwing the changeup. Now, look, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if that's Rex just kind of doing some Rex stuff. And I generally like Rex Hudler.
I love Rex Hudler.
I would love to hang out with Rex Hudler.
So that was 100% him doing Rex stuff.
That's totally fair. There are two ways of reading that, though. One is that he really believes that Brady Singer is comfortable using a changeup, but he doesn't use it as much as he thinks he should. Or it's Rex being kind, generous,
favorable to a younger player.
Yes, I think that
on air.
Yes, I think that's a very reasonable read of it. But if he is in any way comfortable throwing the changeup, he should be throwing it more often. And here's the thing: if he's not comfortable with it, he really needs to be throwing it more often because he's got to get to a place where that's something in his arsenal. That doesn't need to be his first or second option, obviously. It's just something you can go to that keeps hitters guessing a little bit. It's a little bit odd to me, and Brady Singer is not a finished product. I don't want to rush to the finish line on any of these guys. So I'm trying to be very careful, very intentional about not saying Jackson Kowar, Daniel Lynch, Brady Singer are all done. Because I think that's stupid. I think that would be making way too many judgments way too quickly. But how long does Brady Singer not add a third pitch on a consistent basis that he can use reasonably well? How often can he get away without using that before you ask why he's not? Is it him not growing? Or is he not being asked to grow, to work that in a little more often? Is that not something that is a point of emphasis on his regular work? Does he need to go to the minors to get confident in his changeup and not have to do it under the spotlight of a major league level? Can he not work on that on a major league level? Why wasn't that developed further over the course of spring training this year? You know, it doesn't have to be perfect at any one of these points, but it just seems like we keep saying the same stuff over and over with very little changing. Brad Keller got worse this year. He's gotten less consistent. I saw there were a handful of tweets from, I'm going to see if I can find them really quick, from Randy Jazzarelli that I thought were really interesting. This was a few days ago. Frequent guest on the program and a great Twitter follow. But whenever you see a guy like Brad Keller, who is your opening day starter, and hopefully will not be opening day starter for the Royals again, not because he sucks, but because you want guys to be taking his spot from him and moving him down the list a little bit. But like here's Randy Jazzarelli on Brad Keller, okay? This is for his career. He lists the slash lines. First time through the lineup, he's very, very, very good. Second time through the lineup, very, very, very good. In fact, a little bit better. After the second time through the lineup, dude falls apart. I'm paraphrasing because reading slash lines on the radio is always a little difficult. You can go look it up if you want to, but Joe Sheehan, not a Twitter rando, a legitimate voice in baseball, said I spend a good half hour a month screaming at Mike Matheny to take Brad Keller out before it's too late. He never listens. Another perfectly good start ruined by a manager who won't learn the limitations of his starter. Keller has 85 good pitches and goes full pumpkin. Those tweets are both dramatic, but they're good tweets. Is Brad Keller going to end up at a place where either the Royals reevaluate what they ask him to do, or is he going to end up developing in a way that they can ask him to do more? I don't know. But it seems like right now, they're not using him quite right with what he is actively doing. Brady Singer has two pitches. Daniel Lynch came up while he was tipping pitches, had three disastrous starts, and then got sent back down. Jackson Kowar comes up after absolutely mauling Omaha, and then has two disastrous starts that get a total of two innings. I don't think that it's reasonable to think that all of those guys have imploded for completely independent reasons, right? Or at the very, very, very least, in pursuit of being as reasonable and non-overreactionary as possible here, is it not at least reasonable to ask why none of those issues have been amended to this point? It's very early on Kowar. It's pretty early on Lynch. It's not that early on Brady Singer, and it's not early on Brad Keller. But there's very little in baseball easier to do in baseball sports media or whatever. There are very few things that are easier to do than to fire the pitching coach. Because we don't really know what's happening in there. We don't really know that one essentially position coaching change, right? We don't know that that's going to fix all these problems. But it just does seem like, at the very least right now, to be as reasonable as possible, it seems like there is a pattern. this isn't exactly the same thing. It's sort of based off a lot of this on the same topic from Manny Gisarelli again. Somebody had tweeted him and said, third time through the order seems to be a problem for a lot of pitchers. Any ideas as to what the solution is other than a ton of relievers each game? And Randy tweeted, four, period, man, period, rotation, period. And I just thought this was really interesting. This is from a few days ago. It said, four guys can give you 140 to 170 innings each. They'll rarely see a batter for a third time, and you gain an extra reliever for your bullpen. I'm convinced the main reason no one's tried it is the stupid bleeping, you need five innings for a win rule. But that's pretty interesting. I've thought you know, plenty of times about four-man rotation versus five-man rotation and long weeks and short rests and all that stuff. But if you went through a four-man rotation, you say, hey, you're pretty much always going to face 18 batters, and then we're going to start bringing in the relievers. We'll have an extra reliever on the roster because we're carrying one less starter. Maybe you keep your Bolaños, who's there to eat a bunch of innings. I think it's kind of interesting. So, Blake, you look puzzled.
Yeah, so this is actually, I'm trying to think of when this would apply in other sports where a statistical achievement is actually prohibiting the potential science project that is the four-man rotation.
It's interesting. I think somebody else had tweeted this, and I think it may have even been someone from 810 who quotes it. I'm going to see if I can find that because it's super interesting. Because you're right. A totally arbitrary statistical benchmark is directly competing against innovation.
That benchmark, by the way, is your money. Like that, if you don't have wins or losses, like let's say, like right now, if you were just to go out there and pitch the entire season and you never went longer than four innings because you guys had a rotation that was a well-oiled machine, you guys got in, you got out, you did your thing, you could end the season with zero wins and multiple losses, or just like your numbers are going to be based on your contract's based on your numbers, but your numbers are going to be all over the place.
Yeah,
or very minimal.
Well, so it was Nate Bucati who tweeted. He said it's crazy how many things have been how many things about the way we see and play the game have been caused by some of the dumbest scorekeeping rules from the original box score. The five inning win thing is almost as dumb as the concept of a quote unquote earned run. I don't think I hate earned runs as much as Nate does, and that's okay. We can have that conversation some other time. It's fine. I don't really have a strong opinion about earned runs, but the five innings for a win, it all, because it immediately no longer applies as soon as another pitcher comes in. Like Ronald Bolaños was, he could have won the Royals game yesterday if the Royals would have scored, let's say, 12 runs. Bolaños could have gotten the win, even though he pitched 3 1/3 after coming in and cleaning up for Coar's 1 1/3. Coar got the loss in 1 1/3, but he couldn't have gotten the win if he would have. It's silly. But I think that's a super interesting observation from you, Blake, and from Nate, and from Ranny, and the whole thing I just found super interesting.
It's just so weird because that pitcher could come in and you could, like the Royals did the other day, score 9 runs in the first and then take him out in the second and be like, hey, we're just going to use like the kind of lower layer, the middle guys, because right now we just need to make sure this game has been, you know, bridged and let's just finish it.
Yeah.
So, but that pitcher clearly won.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, no, it doesn't apply to anybody else.
It's really bonkers. Do we need to take another break here? Do we need to take we can do it right now.
We got about 5 minutes.
We need to take a break before the end of the hour?
Nope.
Or no, we don't.
We're
okay,
good.
Great.
You know me. I usually roll with a two break set. You let me know if we want a third.
That's me. I got to know my teammate here.
I'm Salvador Perez. I'm calling the game.
And I'm Jackson Coar, and I'm throwing this Sharpie off the balcony, dude.
That being said, okay, so this is the one thing, and this isn't giving Jackson Coar an out, but I will say.
Tell me.
He had never pitched to Salvador Perez, at least not to my knowledge, his first start.
Sure.
That, and you could tell because he was getting crossed up all over the place. Even Salvi said, I hadn't caught him. He had been caught more by bullpen and Cam Gallagher.
Sure.
Now that
he
was
threw to Gallagher last
nullified when he threw to Gallagher last night.
Right.
But I was trying to give a little like, okay, maybe we can give him a little bit of leeway, but not really.
I actually am fine giving Jackson Coar a little bit of leeway because he just got here. You know, if he is this sort of erratic, not, maybe not even on start three, but on start 13, then you're starting to say, oh, this is who Jackson Kowar is. But it's why I think the big picture thing that looks at the circumstances with which he was under which he was called up and the other young guys who have come up around him and before him, that's what gets me nervous. Because, again, it's not that Brady Singer's been terrible or anything. It's not that Brad Keller became atrocious. I mean, he did for a minute, but that's baseball, right? I am much less concerned about the individual production of Jackson Kowar through two starts than I am about the larger sample size view of young pitchers being called up and then having some sort of major deficiency that doesn't get resolved in a particularly timely manner. That's what I think ends up being relatively similar from Singer to Lynch to Kowar, maybe all the way to Brad Keller, where you say, there's some pretty evident shortcomings here. Can this coaching staff, can this organization help them resolve that? And maybe they can, but through about a season's worth of Brady Singer now, with an offseason in the middle of it, through a disastrous debut for Daniel Lynch, through a disastrous first two games for Jackson Kowar, through a disastrous start to the year for Brad Keller, who has stabilized things, I'm not sure why at this point you would give the Royals the benefit of the doubt, at least in a major way. I'm not saying it's a nightmare, burn it all down. I don't think it's all over. That they can't develop a pitcher, whatever. But there's enough of a pattern there that I think it's noteworthy. I think it's relevant. I don't know if anything's going to happen from it, but that's something we'll talk to David Lesky about here in about 5 or 10 minutes from now. We'll see. We'll also see if he knows. I will not actually ask Lesky this. You know what? Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do to try to even our playing field. It's been a while since we had a good old-fashioned Sports Sunday poll question. So the poll question is, did you know that the frogs in boiling water, what would you call that? Anecdote?
Saying myth.
Was a myth. Did you know that the frogs in boiling water anecdote was a myth? Yes, no. Is that phrased confusingly?
No, I think that sounds right. But I would read it just like you said it.
Did you know that the, quote, frogs in boiling water, unquote, anecdote wasn't true or was a myth?
Was a myth.
Was a myth. Okay.
Because if you thought wasn't in there, now you're like, okay, it's all over the place.
Paul, did you know that the frogs in boiling water anecdote was a myth? Hashtag Sports Sunday. You can vote on this at JB Briscoe. And, of course, I'll retweet it from at Sports Radio 810 because this is important. But I want people to know this, and I want to know if people knew this. Do you know the embarrassing one for me was a while ago, I think also on Sports Sunday. You know the Trojan horse? That whole thing?
Like the
soldiers
story?
In the horse? Yeah. It's just a story. Not historical.
What?
Oh, thank God I'm not alone.
No, like really?
Yes. Not a real thing. I thought it was a historical event. Apparently it's just a story. Is your mind blown?
It is. I thought it's 100% thought it was real.
I did too.
And I also thought Achilles was real. So, you know.
Hey, that's a
in
Greek
the Battle
god.
Of Troy totally
that's
happened.
That's right. Okay, hold on. So, we're going to have to push to the end of the hour. Because I need to verify this. And there's let me double check this really quick. I gotta verify this now really quickly. I'm searching my own Twitter history, because I'm pretty sure I put this out in a poll question. Yeah, holy smokes. This is from January 16th, 2018. Did you know that the story of the Trojan horse was a mythical story and not a historical event? 55.8% of people said they did know that, but 44% of people, like me and Blake, apparently didn't know that. I'm still stunned by that one.
I 1,000 years thought that was real.
One of the most dangerous things about this life that just you crack open a microphone and you start saying things into it is eventually you say, yeah, and they storm right in just like the Trojan horse, the real historical event. And then everyone else around you goes, oh, you're stupid. Huh? You're a genuinely dumb man. I go, oh, well, I guess I am, because I thought that was real. Then I also thought that if you heated up a frog in cold water, it would eventually boil alive. And apparently, that's not true either. We're just dispelling, well, and also the Royals pitching, the coaching is good. Lots of myths here on today's Sports Sunday.
And if we really just want to ruin, if you guys are just going to ruin all of the things that we thought growing up.
Don't you say a word about Santa Claus right now.
Oh, don't worry, I'm not talking about Santa Claus. But just know
Tooth Fairy?
That every sound that you've ever heard of a dinosaur on a movie make doesn't exist, because that's not what they sound like. Or nobody's ever heard them ever, so they made it up. And you know how they usually make it up? They combine some sort of like hawk sound. Actually, even what? Funnier. Even funnier. The bald eagle doesn't sound anything like what you hear the scare or whatever it
Do
is.
We
like,
have bald eagles.
I know. They don't sound like that at all.
What?
That's usually a hawk sound that they overlaid in movies to make it sound a lot cooler. An eagle's call is actually kind of ugly. Boom! Ruining dreams left and right.
I'm gonna have to take a minute before we talk to Lesky to pick up the shrapnel of my exploded mind. The good news is that we also need to take a break.